notorious statewide sports talk. On your radio, digital radio, the app and streaming. RSN's Breakfast with Half with Daniel Harford.
Welcome to Breakfast and RSN Midweek Activity. Nice to have your company. Wherever you are listening across the globe, you can do that these days. Technology is a wonderful thing. But even if you're just a little bit more local, great to have your company. 2 days into the working week, we'll get through this one. Then it's a downward run to the big sporting weekend. And we'll be covering all that and a whole lot more on Breakfast through those next couple of days. And there's been a bit happening in the world of sport in the last 24 hours or so, and we have a great lineup ready for you to chat about that and a whole lot more today. It is a little bit football skewed today. Midweek can sometimes do that, although we have a bit of diversity normally midweek, I suppose, around these parts. But such has been the news cycle and the coverage of Australian rules football in its issues in the last little while. It's continued the momentum this morning with us here on Breakfast. We're going to catch up with Neil Baum today. Now, Baumy, of course, front and centre yesterday at the Damien Hardwick farewell press conference. It was confirmed, yes, we thought it might have been, but it was confirmed at 10:30 that he would be standing down as the coach of the Tigers after his 3 premiership reign there at the Richmond Footy Club. But Baumy has been an unbelievable support for him through the journey. As you heard, or some of you would have heard Damien talk about yesterday, rubs his belly and good luck, good things happen. And that's what he said, or something thereabouts, in the press yesterday. So the Godfather will join us and tell us what sort of hole he leaves there at the Tigers, but knowing very full well that you got to move on really quickly, which the players did, after the presser, straight out the training. Life goes on, and the footy world doesn't stop, even though one of Tiger's favourite sons has called it the day. So Baumy will give us the latest on that. Paul Roos, going to catch up with Paul Roos shortly, in fact. We'll just talk about the world of coaching and the challenges within and timelines and shelf lives and all that sort of stuff. I want to have a chat to Roosy, who these days resides in Hawaii. A nice place to be hanging out, I reckon, particularly this time of year if you're a Melbournean. Getting a bit fresh out there. So Roosie's going to join us shortly. Sam Wiedemann's going to spend some time with us as well. The Bombers forward, former Demon, of course, enjoying his time in the sash of the Essendon Football Club at the moment and up and about again after the weekend's performance over the Tigers in the game that ultimately was the final straw for Damien Hardwick's reign. And James Sicily, yes, our man Sis, the captain of the Hawks, is going to be joining us in studio later on this morning as well. So it's a pretty good lineup for a Wednesday morning. And, of course, as part of the conversation, part of the happenings around here, we will get you a winner on the early mail like we did yesterday. Not in the Thoroughbreds, of course, but in the Greyhounds. And I tipped the Greyhound trainer in. I told the boys to get the Greyhound trainer in yesterday, Gary George. 2 first names, of course. But 3 winners. We could have gone the treble. He had a treble at Horsham 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. Got him on yesterday, and as the Prez says, finally, we got a dog winner. And our man Gary George trained another treble at Horsham. I think we've found our dog man. Well, I think you might be right, Prez. I think we just keep giving Gaz a call, especially when the dogs are at Horsham. He's a Horsham treble specialist is what he is. That's what he is. So another profit yesterday for us, and I was in charge of the early mail yesterday, so no surprise to see.
There's no cash here. Here, there's no cash.
That's enough
right?
from you.
Cash, no. Robbo?
No cash.
No cash, but there's some cash. There is some cash yesterday because we made cash. Sale today for all the Thoroughbreds and in the early mail just before 7 o'clock. The Apprentice will come in with a poll today. Not sure how he's going at the back with it. There's some debate, conjecture, and some hijinks and tomfoolery at the back when it came to the poll this morning. I didn't get the lowdown on what they ended up going with, but we'll get his poll this morning as well, and we'd love you to get involved in the conversation. 1-300-652-927 on the open line. 0416-90-50-52 via the SMS. You can tweet us anytime you like at Breakfast with Half or at RSN927 as well. Don't forget the great Scott Gullen, who's basically moved in here to the RSN Towers. He's got a bed underneath Johnny Bowden's HR desk. He just jumps in and sleeps because he's here that often. He's going to join us as well for all the latest footy news and on the back of yesterday's big day at Tigerland where Scotty was front and centre, and we'll have a chat about that. But also there's a I think there's a major issue in the game, and I'm being quite serious about this, a major issue in the game that was highlighted last night by the findings of the Lockie Hunter appeal for his one-match suspension for his front-on contact with Connor Rozee. I think there's a major problem with the game, and there's going to be a major incident sooner rather than later, and we've encouraged it through the laws of the game. And I need to talk about that with Scotty a little bit later on. Now, the Owl always gives us the latest sporting news. That's what he does around these parts. He does a very, very good job of it. So, good morning to you, Owl.
Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. Very well indeed. What's doing in your world?
Bit of this, bit of that.
A bit of this, bit of that. You weren't hanging out with the Broodmares up at Gold Coast, were you?
No, I wasn't, but I was watching with great interest yesterday.
You don't own Forbidden Love, do you?
Certainly do not.
Or Piping Hot.
4.1 and then 3 million respectively for those two.
Well, I need one of those mares. I need to sell one of those mares. I'd like to have 3 million bucks or 4.1 million bucks in the pocket.
Well, not in sight. You never know when you put her through the ring.
Well, in sight, you mean?
Oh, sorry.
Well, in sight. No, we've sold her. She's gone.
Oh, she's gone.
She's gone.
Wow.
No, she's mate. We are our syndicate. Our ownership syndicate is brutal. If you're not stepping up, although she was a very good performer for the stable, tripled our money on her and made some on the punt as well. So we've had a good time with Well Insight. She's done her job.
How's the following?
She's got new families.
Former Collingwood superstar going for you,
Peter Dacos.
Yeah,
Dacos is what's Dacos doing? Dacos, was he gelded? Can't remember which one's which.
I hope he was.
I reckon Dacos was gelded and is coming back into work soon. I think that's the update. I can't quite remember. Mitch Beer, if you're listening, give us a call. 1-300-652-927. And you can give us the update on Dacos. I did get an update last week. I've forgotten.
You are a Leviathan owner, no doubt about that. Hey, let's get some sports news. We'll start with some Premier League. Bukayo Saka has signed a new deal to stay at Arsenal until 2027. The England forward, who has scored 14 goals for the Gunners this season, said, "I think this is the right club, the right place to make the next step. It's a beautiful club. Look where we are." Which was a little bit interesting, given their fall from grace. But
yeah.
Good business there for Bukayo Saka. He is a very good player. The Miami Heat will be looking to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals today when they host Boston in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Who
the Nuggets
cares?
Advanced to the finals yesterday.
Who cares? We've cashed out.
After sweeping the Lakers 4-0. That was a come-from-behind win yesterday from the Nuggets. So the Lakers are out. And then the interesting news was LeBron James.
Yes.
Post-match, he says he's going to consider his future in the offseason. Let's have a listen to the King.
I don't get a kick out of making a conference appearance. I've done it. A lot. And it's not fun to me to not be able to be a part of, getting to the finals. But we'll see. We'll see what happens going forward. But I don't know. I got a lot to think about, to be honest. And just for me personally, going forward with the game of basketball, a lot to think about.
So that was the King yesterday.
He was quite pensive, wasn't he?
Mm.
Quite considered. He wasn't quite ready for that conversation. He was thinking on the fly. You could hear his mind ticking over.
I think it took a lot of the journos in the room by surprise as well, which that it probably shouldn't. He's 38, but I suppose he, given his body and preparation and how consistent he is in getting himself up year in, year out, I mean, his body is really a temple. His preparation, as I said, he gets to the games 5 hours beforehand, shoots around by himself, does gym work, Pilates, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that could be an interesting one this off-season.
Yes, that would be a big announcement. Do you think there'll be a sort of the decision sort of stuff?
Mm.
Like it was when he moved. What did he do? He took his talents to,
yes,
to Miami?
South Beach.
South Beach it was, that's right,
yeah.
Take my tatters to South Beach.
He has 1 year remaining on his contract with the Lakers worth $46.7 million, by the way.
Oh, he might stay around for a bit.
And then also a player option for the following season worth $50.4 million. So we'll see what happens there. But well done to the Denver Nuggets. I think they win the whole thing, regardless of who they face. They are a very well-oiled machine.
Although Jimmy Butler seems to be stopping trains at the moment. He can do anything. Man, Jim.
And just lastly, this is an interesting one, and one I don't know a whole lot about. We might need to follow up as we head into the French Open, but former world number one Simona Halep has accused tennis's doping authority of publicly stating one thing while privately doing another by requesting a further delay of her hearing. Halep was charged with a second doping offence last week over irregularities in her biological passport. The Romanian has been suspended since October after testing positive for a banned substance at the US Open. The second charge is separate to the one for which she is already suspended.
Right. Okay, so promising one thing, doing another behind closed doors. All right, well, that's interesting. I don't know where that's going.
Mm.
Maybe Craig Gabriel will be all over that. Of course, as you say, the French Open coming up next
Sunday.
Week. Yeah,
Sunday our time starts. Sunday.
So next fortnight's going to be big business over there at Roland Garros, and Craig Gabriel will be all over that. So maybe he can give us some clarity on that situation. There's an SMS that's come through, Al. Dimmer, in his press conference, said he cooked the sausages 1,000 different ways. Couldn't cook them 1,001 ways. Just wondering how many times you cook the snags half and if you can fire up the barbie to coach the Tigers. Have you got any sausages in the freezer? Now, the former Socceroo has been talking about this pre-show and he's charged in. He saw that SMS and he's charged in. He wants to talk about this. Socceroo, good morning.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, Al. It was a fascinating press conference yesterday. There were many quotes to come out from it that we love. You know, talking about where the Hardwick goes in the media. He said there's a better chance of seeing Santa walk down Bourke Street than that.
Well, in December you'd say that often. That was an unusual comment from our man.
But it was a terrific press conference. But it was the SMS with the quote from Hardwick. We've got it here. Let's have a listen.
I pushed every button I can. I've tried to cook the sausages 1,000 different ways, and I couldn't find 1,001. So I think the players deserve a new voice that will hopefully give them that spark.
Now, we have heard this before. I think you might have said this morning in our pre-production meeting that it was in Yabby Jeansism.
My word of this.
But where I'm trying to work out where the
players
origin
are like sausages.
Of the quote comes from, because I can only think of a handful of ways to cook sausages.
What do you mean?
I'm not your Gordon Ramsay type or your Curtis Stone types or your Fidel. What's his name? Manu?
Graham Manu. Graham Manu, Cricket Victoria.
So you can bake them. You can grill them.
Yes.
Stove. Barbecue.
Yes.
Curried sausage.
You can curry a sausage, my word, you can.
So, I'd actually like to take a turn from Brett Kirk. We like to engage with the listeners. 1-300-652-927 to call.
Did you just throw to the talkback number?
I did.
Really? Oh, man.
Getting this very comfortable.
This is getting out of hand.
Just
this
ways,
is getting out of hand.
Welcome to Breakfast with Half and Maury.
Breakfast with the former Socceroo.
By the end of this morning, we need to have 1,001 ways to cook a sausage. Because I reckon if we can come up with that one extra way, we could see Hardwick back in the coach's box. Now, you're a chef.
Yes.
Well, I look at you, I just think immediately a chef.
Well, absolutely. Culinary delights.
Have you got a couple others?
Well, the braised sausages, of course. The slow cooker sausage, the sausage soup. The sausage rolls, sausage pies. What else have I got?
What's that, 12?
Well, I'm up to at least a dozen.
Come on, Al.
At least a dozen I've given you.
When you look at Al, you don't think chef, do you?
Oh, that's a bit rough.
I think exquisite human who could do capable of anything, Al.
You're a beautiful man.
Thank you. That's what I think.
Al, have you got?
No, I've got nothing.
It's really stumped me trying to. Out of all the things that came out from the press conference yesterday.
You've come in here, you've thrown to the talkback number.
It's a bit of a silly morning.
And you've stumped yourself with sausage cooking opportunities. Righto, if you've got another way for our man, the former Socceroo, he's having a challenge. He's having a quandary, and we need to sort him out because he's an emotional beast and I can't have him throwing things out the back. How can we cook a sausage for our man? 1,001. I didn't mind that little story from Dimmer, that little analogy. Because it's the genesism. It's the players are all sausages. You can cook them, bake them, stir fry them, whatever you want to do. But at the end of the day, they're all just sausages.
You can fry them.
My word, you can. Did we not say that?
I don't know. There's 13.
You need to write a list. You've got to have a list.
Apprentices on it.
You can't just be saying stuff.
He's on it.
Someone's talking about sausages. You know what? I'm going to talk to Paul Roos after the break. I'm not going to ask him about sausages. I'll let the sausage sit for a little bit. And we'll come back to the sausage. If we need to, a little bit later on. But I know that Paul Roos will have a bit to say about the world of coaching on the back of the Damien Hardwick. Standing down yesterday as coach of the Tigers, Paella. Sausage in Paella. The Spaniard should have known that.
Oh,
off the SMS.
Yes.
There's a lot of, in fact, there's three Spanish sausage references up there.
Really?
Yes. And the fact that you didn't come up with it suggests there's trouble in paradise.
Mucho gusto.
Paul Roos to join us after this. A lot talked about yesterday and this morning again on the back of Damien Hardwick's decision to stand down after his time at the Tigers. 307 games, three premierships, 13 and a half years in the big chair at Richmond. It's on the back of Alistair Clarkson standing down last week, of course, for very, very different reasons, but the pressure of coaching has never been tougher. Paul Roos knows a fair bit about that. Premiership coach himself has been good enough to join us on the line to discuss that and a whole lot more. Roosie, good morning.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm going very, very well. What do you think when you first heard the news that Damien Hardwick was going to pull the pin at round 10 throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprise, but then I suppose you rationalise it and you sort of think, well, he's been there a long period of time and he always seemed to be a guy that was very thoughtful in terms of what he was going to do, what he could give the Richmond Football Club. And, you know, it is a long period of time and sometimes it just feels right, you know, to step away. And I know I went through that. The succession plan with John Longmire had another year, and then when I went to Melbourne. So, yeah, it's really hard to get inside someone's head completely. But surprised initially, but then, you know, after thinking through it and, you know, all the reports and so forth, it's probably not that surprising.
So having a succession plan and knowing there's an end date, can that be a real positive thing for a coach, particularly someone like you who's been around for quite some time and did a lot of the hard yards to get to that point, but knowing that there's an end date rather than a floating sort of timeline?
Yeah, it certainly helped me. I can only speak for myself. But, you know, when I sort of decided to step down and had another 12 months, you know, I was getting towards the stage. I was still enjoying what I was doing, but I felt like there was an end point and I needed to be aware of that. So I went to the club and I said, look, you know, I'm going to step down. And they said, look, can you coach another year? I said, yeah, look, that was my plan anyway. And then they decided to put Johnny Longmire, which is great. So look, for both of us, it worked extremely well and it worked really well at the Melbourne Football Club as well. And I think from a senior coaching point of view, it did. It gives you a little bit of breath of life. It gives you a chance to upskill another coach that's coming in, a bit of excitement for the players, knowing that there's a new coach coming, but the old coach is still there. So I think there's a lot of positives around it if it's done in the right way.
Is it becoming more management than ever, do you reckon, the world of AFL coaching? You're seeing Kenny Hinkley rejuvenated on the boundary line where you really can't see too much of the game, so you're dealing with the players and managing emotion and keeping connection. We've seen a lot of coaches down the last couple of years on the bench trying to have that level of intimacy with the players, I suppose, throughout the game, and becomes more management than strategy and structure and coaching. Is that sort of where it's going?
Yeah, I think if you're... To be a good coach, you have to be a good manager and have really good self-awareness. I think that's a really big part of it now. I mean, my time at Sydney was probably a little bit different because you're a young coach and you're actually trying to do the X's and O's. But as I got towards the end of that, I realised getting good senior coaches, assistants around you was, and then going to Melbourne was very much a management role. I think if you can't manage now and you haven't got great self-awareness, you're not going to be a successful coach.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's probably fair. And you look at the ones who have succeeded in recent years, they seem to have the best awareness and emotional intelligence too, from what we can see from afar. Anyway, what about the job itself and the pressure that everyone's under? We hear about soft cap challenges and what that's done to footy departments and load on coaches, but also just the scrutiny and the coverage of the game. We've seen Alistair Clarkson walk away last week for very, very different and unique reasons. And then Damien Hardwick, after 13 and a half years, saying mid-season to pull the pin. Is it, do you reckon, harder to coach than ever in the modern game?
Yeah, and look, depending on the club you're at, but if you look at the media is certainly a massive industry now, isn't it? I mean, you and I know that, having worked in and I've coached, and you've coached in the AFLW as well. I mean, the media is a massive industry. And in some way, shape or form, there's sort of now a disconnect a little bit between the game and the media. You know, the media is a business. You know, it's not just about the Carlton-Collingwood game on the weekend. It's about what comes out of that game, what comes out of the Richmond game. So the media are now looking for stories outside of what it was 30, 40 years ago when I started playing. So that's dramatically different. But what hasn't changed? Yeah, the numbers have changed because there was 12 teams and now there's 18 teams. But 9 teams have to lose every weekend and only one team can win the premiership. So that hasn't changed, if that makes sense. So yep. Suddenly you've got pressure on teams that are rebuilding that you never really had before. Even though the media think they're not going to win, there's still a story when they don't win. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that's happened in the last sort of 10 or 15 years. And then I think that the free agency's created difficulties for bottom teams as well. Then now you've got Tassie coming in, and yeah, the complexities of the game has never been greater. You mentioned COVID, you mentioned the soft cap, you know, all those sorts of things. So yeah, look, there's no question now, you know, it's way more difficult to coach than when I started at the end of 2000 or midway through 2002.
Have you heard from some of your contemporaries and mates that are still in the business about the soft cap impact and the stress and strain that adds to their load?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, yeah, it's common sense to sort of say if we haven't got as many staff and as many resources, then we can't service the players enough, sort of thing. So, yeah, talking to friends regularly that are still in the business, you know, it is very difficult. I mean, the other thing that's become hard too is, and this is probably more for the bottom teams, that the players association, the players aren't there as often now. So it becomes really difficult to improve, and that's certainly a problem. I know in speaking to some of the coaches from the bottom teams, they just don't get access to the players enough. And the fans don't really understand that now. But the players have enormous amount of time off, and that was a really great frustration of mine going to Melbourne Footy Club. You know, they now have 3 weeks off at Christmas. They have multiple weeks off. They have half days off here and there. They have four-day breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're a fan of a bottom club, often the lack of development is because the players just aren't at the club often enough to improve, you know, at the rate that the fans demand.
Yeah, right. That's a great insight. The great Paul Roos with us from Hawaii, just by the way, talking about the world of footy back here in Melbourne Town on the back of Damien Hardwick standing down yesterday. Just on that timeline stuff from a coaching perspective, is there a window you've got, you reckon? You've been through it a few times. Is there a window you've got at a club before you start to get a little bit stale, in your experience?
Look, it's funny because when I was playing, and I formulated this plan half when I was playing, I sort of said if I ever coached, I reckon 7 or 8 years. I don't know. That was the timeline I sort of put on myself. And that was before I even knew I was going to coach, to be honest. And again, that sort of predicated a little bit on potentially not winning a premiership. Now, I think I could have lasted longer in Sydney because we did win the premiership in 2005. But that was the timeline. It was sort of 8 years, 8.5 years, and 7 years is when I... So that was in my head, you know. Now, obviously, Damien won a premiership and Clarko did. And I think the ones you can sort of reset after winning a premiership, Johnny Longmire, et cetera, et cetera. But in my head, that was probably, and I don't know why, I know you played as well, Arf. Maybe it's just that I got sick of coaches. Not that I had coaches for that long, but, you know, I sort of had in my head, it was about that 7 or 8 year mark without success. Now, with success, is, as I said, is a different kettle of fish, and we've seen Damien, you know, three premierships, being an incredibly successful coach. But but probably from a point of view, yeah, you've got to be aware of the players are listening to you time and time again. It's a little bit different now because you've got assistant coaches, but certainly my view was about that 7 or 8 years without the success of a premiership.
That's interesting insight, I reckon. It's good to hear someone who's been through it talking about that. And what about your mate Ross? He's taken the job at the Saints. He's going gangbusters. So you've been in touch with Roscoe?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I sort of try and leave the coach to Ryan during the season because I text him every now and then and tell him well done and give him a bit of advice every now and then. But no, you tend to leave him alone because you know how stressful we just talked about that sort of thing. But look, it's not surprising because, you know, when you go back on his time at St Kilda the first time, you know, he's been an incredibly successful coach there. He took 3 out of grand final as well. So his pedigree is very, very strong. So the fact that he came in and is doing what he's doing is not surprising. He's a very good coach. And I think also on the back of Brett Ratton, I think Brett and Ross would acknowledge that as well. I think Brett did some really good stuff for that footy club, set them up around the contest. They're a really hard team. They're a physical team. They tackle really well. They win contested ball, and that's on the back of Brett Ratton. So I think if you're going to come in on the back of a coach, certainly Rats is one that you would love to come back in. I'm not that you'd ever want to replace a coach, but if that makes sense, I thought Brett set them up in a lot of areas, particularly, you know, their hardness around the footy.
How's the weather in Hawaii, Rizzy?
I'm always reluctant to talk to Melbourne people about the weather in Hawaii, huh? Yeah, do you want to give me your weather first and
well,
go back with mine?
No, it's gorgeous currently. It's a bit fresh in the mornings, but it's gorgeous at the moment.
Yeah, well, we're only at 26 degrees here.
Oh, so. You poor fella. Don't know how you do it. Don't know how you do it every day, mate. But we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. Nice to chat as always. Take care.
Good on you, mate. Thanks a lot.
Nice to have you with us, 23 past 7 on a Wednesday morning. Hey, fair to say there's been a bit of news floating around the Richmond Football Club, and Neil Baum is about to join us, but I just want to hear what Damien Hardwick had to say about Baum as we get him on the line.
coincidence he comes to our footy club and he's like one of those Buddha dolls. You rub his belly sort of thing, and the good luck follows you sort of thing. But he's been an incredible, you know, servant to our footy club, but footy in general. And you know, Barmy's one of those guys that is very forthright in his opinions of the game. And sometimes when you do overcomplicate it, he'll tell you. And that's a great thing about Neil. You know, I've got enormous respect for the man. I've got a great understanding of what he's given to me and our football club. The pressure he's taken off me with doing the things that I don't love to do, it's amazing. By doing that, he's helped us get better.
That's why we love him. We respect him enormously around these parts. He's the godfather. He's got a very, very lucky belly, says Damien the Hardwick. He's on the line. Good morning, Barmy.
And if I'll slightly swear, and I do all the shit jobs, that's what he said. You'll pardon the expression.
Yes, no, but you make a good point. You took a bit of the heat off him and took over the stuff he didn't like to do, and all of a sudden, Barmy, you're three flags deep.
Yes, it's been a wonderful time, and as challenging as it is, it's been really selfless of Damien to put himself in the position that he's in. He could have just shut up and gone on forever, really, because we love him and he's been here. He's done a good job and the players respect him, etc. But he's felt that, you know, maybe at some stage I'm going to come to a finish and I might drive it rather than let it all just happen to me. So in a lot of ways, he's been really thoughtful of the players at the club. And as tough as it is to replace him, it's probably the best way that it can happen if he had to choose.
I was listening to Lee Matthews talk about this last night, Barmy, and, you know, that Lee's the doyen, you're the godfather, he's the doyen, that's how it works. He's talking about this fact that it is round 10 and it is unusual for a coach to call time in his career, full stop, but let alone under halfway through a season. When you first heard the news, did you think, bloody hell, this is going to put us on the back foot a bit, or did you think that's probably about right?
Oh, I was really concerned at first because, you know, you replace it. Like, he's been a wonderful coach and gets on really well with the players and challenges them well, etc. But then when he explained what he felt and why he felt it and why he thought it was the best move, well, that's what you do in footy. Well, you go, well, okay, how can we turn this into a positive? And I think it will, because the players are all really relaxed about it. They still have enormous respect for Damien, but they're going to move on and they'll get someone else, you know, talking to them, which just might be a little bit different. There might be a little bit of a view. We might, you know, start to win those stupid games that we're losing just by the players buying in a little bit more. Because my feeling is that the reason we've lost a few of our games is the players haven't quite believed in themselves enough, haven't quite really challenged themselves enough. And I don't know why that's happened, but maybe we can turn that around. So the first thought was it's a worry, but then once we settle down, I think we'll be pretty bloody good. I reckon it'll be a really positive thing for us.
Barmy, in hindsight, looking back over the last couple of weeks or month, did you see any signs that this bombshell was coming?
Well, probably when I really think about it, because he was sort of battling a little bit with some of the stuff that was going on. As he said, the more you're in it and the more you've won, the worse that the losses become. And I think he was reacting quite significantly to the fact that, what the hell's happened here? We've lost again. How did that happen, sort of thing. So I suppose if I really serious about it, I could probably smell it a little bit, but footy's not usually like that, so you don't expect that to happen. I mean, coaches don't call things on themselves. It's normally some mad bugger in the club making those stupid decisions. You know what I mean? So no, yes and no.
And going forward, Andrew McWalter takes the reins now, Minnie, as they call him around your parts. He's been a long football servant, done a great apprenticeship to get to this point. Is he senior coach material? No, he's interim coach, and it's nothing too significant just at this stage. But is he senior coach material?
Oh, I think no doubt. He really gets the game. He's a little bit. Sorry, I'm just out in Fitzroy and a tram's going. He's a bit like Craig McRae, I think. You know, he really gets the game. He understands it. He's got a terrific relationship with his players, and a bit of an understated personality in it because he's quite humble. But I think he genuinely is. But senior coaching is not just about a one man anymore. It's all about how they fit into the group and how they get people to work for them and what support they get. So I'll be really interested to see how he goes. But, you know, obviously the club's in a position where they need to look at the world and go, okay, what do we need? Who is it? You know, it may be Andrew, it may be someone else, but at least he's got the opportunity to really encourage the players to play, and we can see him firsthand how he does the job. So it's a great opportunity for him.
Barmy, do you see Dimmer coaching again?
I do, yeah, I think he would. But he won't for a little while because he said what he said is that he's puffed out. So he's just going to have a bit of a relax. But I think he probably will because I think people will want him to. They'll offer someone will offer him something that he's got to seriously consider at some stage. So I think it'll be a little while.
There was a caller before the break, Barmy, and there's been a little bit of cynicism in some quarters on the whole decision, and that Dimmer is jumping from a sinking ship, that it's all over there at the Tigers. You've got to start to rebuild. He didn't really want to be a part of it. How do you respond to that?
Oh, if you know Dimmer, you know that's not the case at all. He takes responsibility for all sorts of things, so no, that wouldn't be his motivation at all.
Did you try and get him to coach one more game?
Certainly, Brendan. Brendan was keen for him to not go. But we really offered him that kind of the opportunity that he could. But, it also made sense. Once you make a decision, you make a decision, and let's get on with it. So I don't think that really mattered that much. It's almost too emotional in its own way and too subjective, that one. I think he's more than happy to make a decision and move out.
You spent a bit of time with the great Tom Hafey. His impact on that football club is well known. Dimmer's had a huge influence on the last generation of players. Does he sit comfortably in the conversation as one of the most influential people in Richmond's history, Damien Hardwick?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's no doubt that he is, and he was. But he doesn't sort of think about it that way. He thinks about what's next and how he can help the people. So, he's been wonderful. Really has been.
Right, so when new coaches always get a win first up this week, so we just pencil in a win for the Tigers?
I hope so. It'll be a great effort if we do, but we're certainly keen to.
All right, we'll see if we can get that done for the Tiger faithful this weekend when we take on Port Adelaide.
Port will help us, won't they?
I can't see that being a problem. What's your favourite way to cook a sausage before we let you go? Because Dimmer's ran out of ideas.
I'm the barbecue man, I must admit. Simple barbecue on the bit that's got the flame so that it gets a bit of black on it as well.
The grill bit.
That's magnificent.
I don't think that's style 1001.
I think he's tried that one before, you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon.
Right. Well, we'll see how Andrew McWalter cooks those sausages this week for the Tigers. They take on Port Adelaide Sunday at 1:10.
It's a vegan sausage we change.
Oh, no. Oh, you can't win with that. You wouldn't eat that, Barmy. Great to have you as always, mate. Really. Appreciate your time and a busy week at the Tigers.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff. Neil Barmy with us, a godfather. Lucky belly Barmy. Nice to have you with us on a Wednesday morning. Looks like a nice morning as well. I imagine this would be a decent golf morning. Is there any sign of balloonage, Al, for any of our friends out there? Any balloonage action?
I can't see any at this stage.
Window of the World not giving us any balloons just at the minute.
Flag's just blowing gently in the breeze.
Gently in the breeze.
Gently, yeah.
We love gently in the breeze. Great to have great people doing great things like you here. We're looking for breezes and balloons. That's very helpful. After 8 o'clock, I'm going to catch up with Sam Wiedemann, so make sure you stick around for that, particularly Bombers fans, after the dramatic victory on Saturday night against Richmond at the mighty MCG. But Hawks fans, strap yourselves in. Strap yourselves in, because Sunday, down at Utah Stadium in Launceston, the Hawks put on a clinic. The emerging force, the emerging powerhouse, as we're calling them around here at these parts. 116 points was the margin over the West Coast Eagles, and the captain was dominating proceedings as always. He's back with us in studio. For a first time in a little while, James Sicily, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Yeah,
how was Tassie, mate?
Tassie was great.
How good's Tassie?
Mate, I love it down there. Yeah, great result. It was great weather, and didn't expect to win by that margin, but by the same token, West Coast absolutely crippled by injury, like we all know. Listened to the press conference after of Adam Simpson, and he said they only had 26 players to choose from, and, I mean, they got two more injuries out of that game. So, yeah, that's pretty cruel and unheard of. All the best.
It does make it hard, no doubt about that, and West Coast are really battling at the moment. I think that's evident for all to see. But for your club, for your team to go down there and do what you did and have that moment where you got to fill your boots a bit and feel good about the world and feel good about what everything has been building to get to that point, that must have been a nice experience for you and the lads.
Yeah, particularly for the younger guys as well, not so much for myself and Luke and some other senior players, but a lot of confidence would have been gained out of that from the young guys. And now we go into this week against St Kilda with some pretty good form and, like I said, a fair amount of confidence that We're capable.
So how do you review that game then? With what you said before and what we all know about West Coast's current situation, how do you review it? I mean, is it picking on, bullying the little kid in the schoolyard sort of thing, or is there much more substance to it that you've been able to extract from the review from Sam and the coaches?
We actually haven't had the official review yet. Sam had a funeral yesterday, so we haven't really reviewed it hard, but you know we've been trying some things that we picked up out of the Melbourne game, so
yep.
To get an immediate result is pleasing, but you still need some more data, more games to see how we're really tracking in that. But we had 70 inside 50s, and that's a great result, and we were able to play a bit more of a forward half game, and as a back line, we only allowed one mark inside 50. So our contest in general was an absolute tick and something that we probably hadn't been as great in this year, which is understandable with a younger team. But
yep.
A lot of positives, and just got to make sure that young guys don't get too ahead of themselves. Footy's not that easy.
No, well, they've worked that out, I reckon, already. That's not that easy. It's been a bit of a challenge. But you're right, 70 inside 50s to 29. Like it was front half all the way. So if you're playing in the back half, what are you seeing in the game? What did you like when you were seeing? Because you got a chance to watch a fair bit.
Yeah, well, our pressure was the best it's been all year. There's a pressure factor number that everyone tries to get above, and it's above 2, and at some stages we were above 3. So to put that amount of pressure on allows you to play a forward half game, a front half game. So just seeing the guys chase, tackle, harass. They played a slower brand of footy, so it allowed you to set up a bit easier. You know, they were picking one side and playing really skinny, but effort and pressure was definitely something that I saw in front of me.
So contrast that with the toughest game you've played, and you're going to have to give me your judgment on that, and the different style, different ways you've had to play that game. So you got a chance to set up against West Coast, and they couldn't get through you.
Yeah.
Against the toughest game you've played this year, who would that have been, just in terms of system and having to deal with the things that were thrown at you?
Well, I reckon it would have been the Geelong game.
Geelong second half.
Yeah, Geelong second half, or even the Geelong pre-season game that we played down at Cats Ground.
Yep.
Yeah, teams play different ways. So in those Geelong games, they making the ground really big and you're isolated 1v1. You don't really have a chance to help out your other defenders, and your other defenders don't have a chance to help you out. So, and you're running back to goal a fair bit when you're playing really good teams, because they're really good field kicks. They'll make the ground really big, and then they'll find a mark right in the middle of the ground, and then you're just running back to goal because their forwards are quite crafty. So whenever you play teams that are like that, I find it difficult. But if you're able to set up your team defence and get some delay on the ball and get in the right spots, and able to help each other out, it makes it a lot easier.
So we hear a bit of that in commentary these days from footy clubs about team defence and setting the ground up the way you want to do it. How much would you practice in terms of ratio? Would you practice team defence versus the capacity to defend one-on-one? Because you do, as you said, some teams will try and isolate you, not just you, but everyone across the ground, try and isolate you and beat you in a one-on-one situation. So what's the ratio of training for team defence versus the one-on-one situation?
What we do is defense. I reckon 70% of our training would be team defense, and then the one-on-one stuff is more extras and craft that you do with the other forwards. I reckon there'd probably be one drill a week where it's pure one-on-one that's in training. The rest is understanding that the game isn't always like that, and you're going up against Mitchy Lewis and the other tall forwards, and we're going pretty hard and working and competing. So I reckon most of the training's team defence, but there is still an element of one-on-one.
Well, so Mitchy Lewis might be good practice for you this week because Big Max King looked all right for the Saints on the weekend, didn't he?
Well, I didn't catch their game. I think they played at a similar time to us.
Yes.
So, he's been a good player. So, yeah, he's got the potential to kick a lot of goals. I don't think I'll have first crack at him. Someone else will, but we'll see what happens.
So you got something you said before that's piqued my interest in terms of teams that can kick the ball. What's the most damaging component of the game? Is it teams that kick the ball well, or is it teams that extract from contest really efficiently? Because I imagine behind the ball, you've got a bit of time when they're working the hands out of contest. You can maybe set yourself up and frame where the ball's going to go. But if teams kick the ball really well, it's probably tough to defend a bit of that these days.
Oh, it's definitely tougher with teams kicking the ball. When they're extracting the ball or winning it from stoppage, you're set up and you're giving yourself the best chance to win it back. So unless you do get beaten in a 1v1 situation or a contested mark happens where they walk out the front door of the stoppage, then it does make it hard, of course. But transition game is the way it's the game sort of played at the moment. So teams that can win the ball back and execute their kicking skills and break the game open that way when the defense isn't quite set definitely makes it a lot harder.
So, and you spoke after the game about your role changing a bit. What's that look like now for you compared to what it was for those that weren't able to listen to that?
Mostly last year as well and the start of this year, I was playing sort of first or second key tall. And I wanted to get back to my old role of, you know, third tall, fourth, playing on a small and sort of having a little bit more freedom and room to move and play on instinct and read the ball instead of having a sort of negating mindset around not letting my man touch the ball. So,
yep.
I've enjoyed that change of role and it's quite refreshing and I feel like it allows me to see the game a little bit more because I'm not so narrow-minded in just beating my direct opponent. My opponents will change and allows me to stay in the game that way a little bit better.
How many opponents would you have on a given day, any given day sort of average? How many blokes would you play on? It'd be your designated opponent for a period of time.
Oh, I reckon I would have played on 5 different players on the weekend. Yeah.
So how do you plan for that?
You just stick to your tiers, really. So you'll have your high tier, mid tier, deep tier. So Frosty and Blanky will always obviously stay deep, and Jars and Lockie Bramble and Seamus Mitchell, they'll always stay high. So whenever forwards change their tiers, then you just sort of hand over and go with it like that.
So it's more you play an area of the ground as opposed to a position or an opponent.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's good insight for the fans out there. One young man who did a hell of a job for you on the weekend was Josh Weddle, who was the Rising Star nominee this week for the Hawks. Had 28, kicked 2, set the game up for the Hawks early doors. Must have been feeling good about himself. He's a big rig. What's he got to give to this footy club, do you reckon, from what you've seen so far?
Hell of a lot of run and carry, and he's got a massive engine, and he loves to take the game on. So, and as you said, he's ready to go. Like, he's 90-odd kilos, 192 or 3 centimetres, which is something that you don't really get out of an 18-year-old. He's been great. He's becoming so reliable for us, and he can sort of play anywhere as well. So who knows where his position on the field will be at maybe in the future he'll just be positionless. He'll just play where we need him. But at the moment, he's doing a great job as a halfback. And he can even play deep on a tall or he can play on a small because he's got good pace. So, yeah, he's doing some good things. And it's been all about him this week. And he hasn't really enjoyed that. He's ready to move on.
He's not big on the limelight. So he wouldn't be a big social media. You're not big on the ground then, if that's the case.
I don't think he is, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you what sort of personality is he, because I don't know much about him apart from just watching him on the TV. He's a bit quiet and reserved, is he?
Yeah, he's a bit quiet and reserved, yeah. He doesn't mind a laugh. He's just, he loves his footy. He's a hard worker and he's got a questionable choice in fashion, but... he's a good fellow.
He is. He's a very fine young player, Josh Weddle. The ultimate utility, old school utility, you just put him anywhere on the board. I like that. Yeah. I like that flexibility.